When things go wrong, as they sometimes will, when the road you're trudging seems all uphill, when the funds are low and debts are high, and you want to smile but have to sigh, when care is pressing you down a bit, rest if you must, but don't you quit. Life is queer with its twists and turns, as every one of us sometimes learns, and many a failure turns about when he might have won if he'd stuck it out. Don't give up, though the pace seems slow, you might succeed with another blow. Often the struggler has given up when he might have captured the victor's cup, and he learned too late when the knight slipped down how close he was to the golden crown. Success is failure turned inside out, the silver tint of clouds of doubt, and you never can tell how close you are, it may be near when it seems afar. So stick to the fight when your heart is hit, it's when things seem worse that you mustn't quit. So although this isn't a Christian poem as such, I just like the message of it, and that's kind of what I'm going to talk about a little bit tonight. And sort of starting from a point of saying that hard things are going to happen to us all at some point. They haven't yet, they will, and some of you will be in the middle of hard things at the moment. So what I want to go through tonight is two things to acknowledge and six practical things to do to keep going when the going gets tough, so you can kind of keep track and tick them off if you're getting bored. And I'm going to show you a couple of little clips as well to give you a little break from me talking. So the first thing I wanted to acknowledge, Jeff, can you just do the pat thing for me, because I'm not sure that's going to do a lot. I don't really want to be waving it around. The first thing to acknowledge of the two things that I want to acknowledge is that there is a bigger picture. So Jesus told his disciples, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. And he's telling them that at that point, because he knows things are going to get really difficult and really ugly at this point, but he's telling them that so that they can have peace, because there is a bigger picture. And back in November, we talked about, we had a mission, didn't we, called Our Story, and a lot of us told our story, and it was good to sort of think about how our story slotted in with God's bigger story. And the big story is written by an author that we can trust wherever we're up to in the story that we're in. So, Jess, if you could just show the little clip that illustrates that.
Sometimes I tell them the best story in the world ever. It goes like this. Once upon a time, there was a kingdom of light ruled by a generous king. The princess was as wise as she was fair, and all the people were very happy. The end. Of course, the children know that's not the best story in the world ever. The best story in the world involves struggle. So the story continues. One day the princess noticed the door to the dungeon was ajar. She knew she shouldn't, but... Lower and lower she descends until she sees, chained to the wall, a dazzling dragon. The dragon said,
"Don't yell, I need your help."
"Help?"
says the princess.
"My father told me you came to destroy our kingdom."
"Destroy? No, I came to free you. I came to teach you to fly, and if you release me, I'll teach you."
With quivering hands, she pulled the lever, releasing the shackles, and snap! The dragon grabbed her in his talons and carried her off to his lair across the sea. Distraught, the king asks the knights of the realm,
"Who will rescue my daughter?"
None of them were brave enough, except a simple shepherd from the hills. The king said,
"You, I will make you a knight. Bring back the princess."
So the newly made knight sailed through deadly storms. He fought terrible monsters. He climbed perilous mountains, and he came to the dragon's lair. In an almighty fight to the death, the knight was completely overpowered, and when it looked like all was lost, somehow he trapped the dragon in the cell that had held the princess. The dragon was defeated, the princess was saved, and they returned to the Kingdom of Light. With joy, the king received back his daughter, and she received the knight as her husband. So they all lived happily ever after. That's the best story in the world ever. Because it's every story. It's the great quest, it's overcoming the monster, it's rags to riches, it's love lost and then found, it's tragedy turned to comedy, and the happily ever after. Perhaps these stories thrill our hearts because they echo a true story. Perhaps there really is an ultimate hero who came on a mission to fight evil, to give up his life, to rise again, and to be one with his people forever. What if the fairy tale is true? What if Jesus is the hero of heroes? What if Easter is the myth that really happened?
Yeah, so I came across that at a writer's day I went to, and we were talking about storytelling generally. It really resonated with me. not everybody here knows me, but some of you know that 8 years ago I lost a baby about 25 weeks of pregnancy. So that was the first time I had to walk through a really hard bit in my story. And in the last 12 months, I've also lost my younger sister to cancer. So I actually saw that video 12 days after my sister died at this conference. And it just really struck a chord with me. So I just felt like, you know, wherever I am in my story, there's going to be a different bit, there's going to be a better bit, there's going to be a good ending wherever I am in this story now. And one day it will be okay, if not now, one ultimate day, it's all going to be okay because Jesus writes the whole story, God writes the whole story from beginning to end. Proverbs 16 verse 9 tells us, a man's mind plans his way as he journeys through life, but the Lord directs his steps and establishes them. So we have to keep in mind to try and hold things lightly as we're going through life, and know that when the script alters from what we had in our head, God's going to work it all out for good somehow. I've read quite a few books on the subject. One of them's by Philip Yancey called Disappointment with God. And a quote from that I really like, thanks Jess, is, fidelity involves learning to trust that out beyond the perimeter of fog, God still reigns and has not abandoned us, no matter how it may appear. It's a really good quote. And then the second thing to acknowledge is that we have a different script written in our own minds of how our lives ought to go. And then when we're pulled away from that script, you almost have to allow a mourning process and a letting go of what you had in your mind in the first place. So I'm going to introduce you to an interesting new word now as an English teacher. As I said, I can't resist vocabulary, which is the word palimpsest. That's a picture of one up there. And a palimpsest is a manuscript or a piece of writing material on which later writing has been superimposed or on effaced earlier writing, or something reused or altered but still bearing visible traces of its earlier form. So I first heard the word in a novel that I was teaching at A-level. And it was talking about the sort of oppressive regime that had come in and was trying to erase the earlier lives of the women that they were sort of trying to oppress. But it just sort of it stayed in my head and struck me that we all have our own sort of underscored writing or underneath what God is writing for us. And sometimes we sort of scratch away at that and we try to look at the bits underneath that aren't actually what God is writing. We have to step away from our own idea of our story and allow God to write a different story over the top of that. I think we struggle with it so much because we really feel like this is how it's going to be. We almost feel like we've lived it. We've created that story in our minds before it even happens. So when it all changes, we really feel like we're living a new, unfamiliar life, and we have to sort of step away from it and mourn the loss of the old one, even though it hadn't actually happened yet. So an example from my own life is when we lost our baby. Our baby was a girl called Grace. And I've got two lovely boys now. One of them's at the back there looking at me. And I wouldn't change them for the world, but sometimes when I go to nativity plays, I see little angels in their costumes, or I see girls similar age to what Grace would have been, there's those echoes underneath, you know, there's those bits of the palimpsest that might have been, and I have to try not to kind of dwell on those and scratch at those too much, but to move on and embrace that with God's help, the different story that God has got for me instead. So yeah, I think acknowledging those two things helps us when we're trying to walk through the difficult bits of our stories, but I like practical stuff, because even though I'm fairly seasoned at hard stuff being thrown at me, I'm not sure I'm quite practiced yet at remembering what to do when those hard things do happen. So I'm kind of preaching to myself tonight as much to anybody else. These are sort of a collection of the things that I know have helped me. So one of them is, the first one of the six, is get into God's presence and keep getting into it. I really like Elijah, because I think he's the ultimate biblical example of someone who found his story being rewritten from how he thought it was going to be. And I really like this bit in 1 Kings. He's, you know, he's slain false prophets, he's called fire down from heaven, he's been really going for it with God, and now he's suddenly running for his life, and he's hiding out in a cave, and he's just really feeling sorry for himself and just doesn't know how to go forward. So he's there and he's sort of reminding God of all he's done, and he's lamenting the situation, and he sort of asks God what he should do. And God says, go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. And I think it's only God's presence in this new chapter of his life that allowed him to move forward and live the next part of his story well. And this includes worship as well. It can be really hard to worship when things are going badly. I know this. I'm still there some of the time. We talk about making a sacrifice of praise, and it really is sometimes. But as we step out and do that, then it's like we're proclaiming truths, and the songs help remind us of the truths that are true, even if we're not feeling them at that moment. Remember when I came back to church the first time, we'd had a few weeks off for various reasons when my sister died, and I was sort of feeling like, oh, how am I going to feel? How am I going to be able to worship? But actually, it was really good to stand and declare the truths that I knew to be true. And I think I had a chat with Bridget afterwards, and I said, you know, I sort of was dreading it, but in some senses, I thought, well, if these things still aren't true now, we're in even more trouble than we were in the first place. If they're not true after all the hard stuff has happened or during all the hard stuff, then we're in a lot of trouble because we need God in our hard things. One of my friends once said, I think I've said this before, but I really like it, you can't make yourself have feelings you don't have, but you can proclaim truths you don't feel. You can't make yourself have feelings you don't have, but you can proclaim truths you don't feel. That's a really, really good thing to hold on to. And God's presence always changes things. It changes us. It nudges us forward. It's given us fresh hope. You know, I've come at times and gone home knowing nothing's changed in my situation, but everything's changed in terms of God and God's presence and what he's doing in me. So my second thing is be thankful. And I just wanted to show a little clip. I don't know if any of you have seen Despicable Me 3. There's a little girl in it who absolutely loves unicorns. And she sort of sets a trap for a unicorn. She goes out unicorn hunting. And she thinks she's found a unicorn. And what she's actually found is a one-horned goat. So this little clip that I'm going to show you, she, her dad has got to break it to her that this is not, in fact, a unicorn.
Honey, that's not actually a unicorn.
Huh? But he has one horn.
I'm sorry, sweetie, but he's just a goat. Life is just like that sometimes. We're hoping for a unicorn, and we get a goat.
Well, you know what? Lucky is the best goat in the whole wide world!
Look at that face!
I just want to squeeze it!
There's just something about that when I watched it for the first time that really grabbed me. And it was like, you know, everyone in the audience is expecting her to have a complete meltdown and tantrum because it's not a unicorn, it's a goat. But she just sort of embraces it and accepts it. We can't all be delighted about the situations that are thrown at us, but we can certainly learn to embrace them and accept them and ask for God's help in them, and also to be thankful for all the other things that are still going on in our lives. So that's something I've really tried to do over the last year or so, just really see what's around me, you know, the people that love me, the family I have, the roof over my head, you know, just the thankful things I can be thankful for despite the really hard times that we're going through. It can be a real challenge. Psalm 118 verse 24 says, "This is the day the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it." So finding things daily to be thankful for can just change the direction of our gaze a little bit and just lift us from our gloom a little bit and help us to trust again the one who writes the full manuscript, the full script from beginning to end. The third thing is be honest. Again, another really good book is Faith in the Fog by Jeff Lucas. And he says, "I discovered that being honest about our struggles liberates others because all truth, even ugly truth, brings freedom. I learned that God only uses fragile, limping people because that's the only kind of people there are." And I think there's plenty of examples of that in the Bible. You know, David was really honest with God. Job was too, and God's big enough to take it. It's really important to have people around us who we can be honest with, but who could also speak truth to us and point us back to God and his love for us. I read an article this week about a vicar who lost his son to cancer, and he was saying, honestly, he was having a conversation with a friend, and the friend was sort of saying, you know, just pray to God and trust God, and he was sort of saying, not sure I even know who God is anymore, I'm not sure if I even know God exists, you know, just being really honest with his friend. And this friend just said, that's okay, we can stand with you, we can pray for you, we'll pray for you until you know God's real again, you know, we'll just be there for you. So sort of being honest and having people alongside you is really important. And I think if you have children as well, like discussing disappointment with them and sort of teaching them that life doesn't always go the way we hope. So Samuel gave me permission to share this little example that in December last year, we were coming up for the school nativity plays in year two, and so is Jake, Daryl's son. And he came home with the news that him and Jake had both gone into a hat for the sort of lead role in the nativity play, and Jake had got the role. So Samuel was a little bit gutted about that. So we had to have that conversation with him, and it was a helpful conversation. You don't always get what you want. And in the end, he was an excellent narrator eight and did a great job of that instead and had tons of lines to learn as well. So he was great. And Benjamin, my oldest son, who's 10, he swims. And this time last year, was his first ever swimming gala. And he did a fantastic 50 metres breaststroke and got a gold medal and came up buzzing, got in for the backstroke with high expectations, and somehow sort of rolled over and touched the wall on his front, which you're not allowed to do backstroke. and got disqualified. So there were a few tears. But again, we had a conversation about getting back up from it, and, you know, you live and learn, and things don't always go your way. And it's a helpful conversation to have with them. And I think doing it in the spiritual realm as well, we obviously had to have some hard conversations. There were a lot of questions when my sister was not healed, because we had a lot of prayer for her to be healed. And you can't ignore those questions, especially when kids come to you with them and you don't have answers to those questions, but you can only be honest and have those conversations with them. Because I think we take it really personally when things go wrong, and a lot of people walk away from God when things go wrong. So to sort of have those conversations and teach them that things do go wrong, that you can trust God anyway, is really, really important. The fourth thing is, don't write yourself off because you feel broken. I've been reflecting recently on Paul's perilous journey to go and get an audience with the emperor in Rome. Wendy prayed for me at some point and gave me a word to do with that. So I was just reading that story and reflecting on it. And I looked up the map of where he'd come from, where he went. You know, it was an awful condition, the shipwreck and everything's overboard, and feeling like he was never going to get there. But God just sort of highlighted to me, would we even have got to hear the gospel in Europe if that hadn't happened, if you hadn't gone and endured all those awful things? You just don't know the impact of your story and the difficult things you're going through and what that's going to have on other people. And God can use our brokenness, and he's an expert redeemer of brokenness, and he can use what little we think we have to make a big difference to the world. So in the Bible, you know, the widow's offering and Mary anointing Jesus, things like that. It's people who are broken that gave all they had. There's something that's quite sort of trendy at the moment, called the Japanese art of kintsugi. I don't know if you've seen any of these before or heard of it, but it's a practice where they repair broken things with gold glue, and the finished object is considered to be more beautiful and more valuable than the original thing. And there's loads of examples of it. If you Google it, I like these ones particularly. And I just think it's a brilliant metaphor for what God can do with the broken pieces of our lives. If we keep offering them back to him, and keep allowing him to glue us back together. Number five, nearly there. Have a spiritual first aid kit of scriptures and songs and things to reaffirm the truth of who God is and who you are in him, that you can stand on and declare in times that you're finding it hard to hold on to him. There's a lot of stuff out there on it. There's a really good book called Freedom in Christ that has loads of scriptures. Wendy did a fantastic sermon recently, if you were here, where she sort of unclothed Martin from the black, horrible stuff and hung it on the cross, and then clothed him in a white cloak and pinned to him all the different scriptures and things that showed who he was in Christ. I'm sure she'd send you the PowerPoint if you wanted it. And Paul Ransom has done sheets of it quite recently as well, in the last year or so. Just having those really key scriptures to help us remember who we are and who God is. When my sister was first diagnosed with terminal cancer, I sat in one of the meetings, and Good Father was being played, and I just felt God say to me, you've got to hold on to these truths that I am good and I love you. And you have to just hold on to those absolute truths, whatever you're going through. Another little story about Samuel, just to illustrate a point, he's smiling at the back. One day we were getting ready for church, I heard him say to Graham, my husband, how do you say the word B-U-G-L-E? So Graham says, well, bugle. Samuel says, no, it's buggle, it's definitely buggle. So I sort of hear him come up the stairs, I'm waiting for the question. Mum, how do you say the word B-U-G-L-E? So I said, bugle. No, it's buggle, I'm going to stick with buggle, definitely buggle. So it just, again, God just dropped into my mind in that moment. You know, that's how we can be. You know, we can sort of hear truth. We can hear other people tell us truth. But are we going to choose to believe it? You know, even though I was telling him what it really was, he didn't want to hear it. He wanted to stick with his own interpretation. And one of my, if you're struggling with that, my heart's cry all the time at the moment is, Lord, I believe, help me in my unbelief. You know, we can pray that prayer to sort of help us to grasp those scriptures afresh. So, yeah, my final bit is remember and recall. So Lamentations 3:19-23. I remember my affliction and my wandering, the bitterness and the gall. I well remember them, and my soul is downcast within me. Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed. His compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I think a journaling habit helps. We don't all write things down, but it's just helpful to keep remembering and recalling things God has done for us before. My boys sometimes forget 5 minutes later something that's just happened. So I'll feed them their lunch, and we'll go out in the car somewhere, and they'll go, what's for lunch? I said, we just had lunch. And they go, oh, yeah. You know, and we can be like that with sort of things God has done for us. We just forget so quickly the good things that he has done. And if you can look back and recall them, and we can trust God then for things he's done in the past, he'll do again. And he's got a plan, and he'll finish what he started. So my final thoughts, if Ephesians 6:13. Therefore, put on the full armor of God, so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground, and after you've done everything, to stand. Sort of linking to the original poem that I started this little talk with. Just stand, you know, if you can't go any further forward, just stand, and God will give you all you need to just stand until you can keep going forward again. So we are in a spiritual battle. We will encounter trouble, and he has given us everything we need to stand firm. The devil wants us to give up. And these are practical and simple things that we can do to stand firm and not give up. So let's be people who are determined not to give up whatever we face, who press into God, who support one another, who are honest, who ask big questions, but ultimately trust that he will work it all out for good somehow, someday. The end of the story is a good one because we're part of the ultimate story. And as we live that out, other people will see it and will take them with us. They'll see us living our stories out honestly, struggling, but trusting God to help. They'll ask us questions about that. I just felt prompted to sort of offer prayer for anybody who feels like, quote, life has given them a goat. You know, there are certain situations we can't do a lot about. We've got to live with it. So if life has handed you a goat at any point, you feel like you need a little bit of prayer, I think Daryl and Andy are just going to come up and sing one more song. And if you